Good morning.
Good morning. The court calls United States versus Culp. Please.
Chief Judge Baker, may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Mike Hansel, and I represent the appellant, Private Lazarus Caldwell, in this case. With your permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes.
Granted.
We're here today because a young Marine who was suffering from PTSD and depression and other mental illnesses was driven to take his own life. If he had succeeded, like nearly 3,000 other service members have over the last decade, he would have been treated as if his service was honorable. He would have, his family would have gotten a letter of condolence from the president, and he would have been considered in the line of duty. In failing, he was prosecuted and convicted of a crime. Now, this court has asked whether, as a matter of law, a bona fide suicide attempt can be a crime under the self-injury clause of Article 134. And the answer in a case such as Private Caldwell's, or anyone who's suffering from mental illnesses like the kind that he's suffering from, would be no.
Well, that's the 706 issue, which we didn't grant. So what are you here for?
Your Honor, I believe that the elements would not be met, and certainly there's a substantial basis in law and fact to question the plea in this
case. Okay, so you're making a providency argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
Between your brief and your reply, you made it clear you were shifting to more of an as applied argument in plea rather than public policy argument. Is that an accurate reading of your brief and your reply brief?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your primary argument is that this plea was not provident?
Yes, Your Honor.
Versus no case can ever meet the elements?
The primary argument that I'm making is that this plea was not provident. However, the court asked the broader question, can this ever be a crime under this clause of Article 134 when it's a bona fide suicide attempt? And I think when there are circumstances similar to this case, it would be difficult to envision that occurring. But in this case, the plea was not provident.
And why?
The reason why is because the elements, there's a substantial basis in law, in fact, to question it because the elements weren't properly addressed. And as far as the terminal elements, which I'll start with, there's actually no evidence put on the record to show that he either prejudiced over a discipline or his conduct was of a tendency to discredit the service. With regard to prejudice, to good order and discipline, it needs to be a direct and palpable prejudice, not something that's remote or indirect. And what we've heard on the record in the joint appendix is Private Caldwell, about five separate occasions, the judge asked him questions about this, and he attempted to address it by saying that people thought it was sort of weird. They weren't sure how to deal with him. And that his chain of command was mad at him because people might think that they couldn't go to the chain of command since they weren't able to help him. But none of that actually demonstrates actual prejudice to go over discipline.
Can you give us some examples of what are some classic examples of something that has reasonably direct and obvious injury to good order and discipline?
Yes, Your Honor. I think those examples can be found from some of the case law. The lower court talked about Taylor and Ramsey being dispositive. I don't believe they are. But Taylor, which was not a suicide case at all, it wasn't a suicidal gesture or a suicide attempt, just somebody trying to outdo another person by cutting himself, that would be an example of prejudicial good order and discipline because one person cut themselves and inspired somebody else to do it. It had nothing to do with suicide, and that case didn't stand for anything that had to do with suicide. It stood for whether this 134 clause was preempted by malingering Article 115. But that would be an example of something that might be prejudicial to good order and discipline. I think the Ramsey case as well, that really the facts of that case show a suicidal gesture. It was a self-injury, but not driven by serious intent to end a life. But in that case, there were facts that were plain as far as...
How do you draw the distinction between a gesture and a suicide attempt? And Ramsey shot himself, didn't he?
He did, Your Honor.
Yeah. How do you draw the distinction? And can it ever be a meaningful distinction in law?
I think it can, Your Honor. I think we can draw
guidance. Okay, first tell me how you draw it.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the distinction is whether there was a serious intent to actually end one's life. A gesture would not have that serious intent, serious suicidal intent.
And how was Ramsey a gesture?
Ramsey was a gesture because when we look at the facts of that case, and it's important to note that this took place over 20 years ago when terminology was not what it is now as far as how we address suicides. And so I think the court, when they refer to a suicide attempt, we're actually looking at what we today call a gesture. He shot himself in the shoulder. Mm-hmm. He did it just days before his unit was about to go into a combat area in Iraq during the first Gulf War. The fact that he shot himself in the shoulder with a typical suicide attempt where there's serious intent to end one's life, that's not something somebody would do. I think those facts show that this was really a suicidal gesture case, and I think the court handled it.
Well, and in this case, he sliced his wrist with a razor, which certainly has a backing in classical antiquity. But if you want to do away for yourself in a hurry, it may not be the most efficient way.
Yes, Your Honor, but in this case, the uncontradicted facts in the record are that he was trying to end his life. Okay. And the judge recognized that, and the lower court recognized it as well.
You don't disagree that he pleaded guilty, right, and that there's a stipulation of fact?
No, Your Honor, I don't.
You don't disagree that on Joint Appendix pages 67 and 68 that he explains to the military judge why his behavior would discredit the armed forces?
No, Your Honor, I don't disagree with that.
Okay, so given that fact, what about the and this is a completely different issue than whether it made sense or was a good idea for the command to charge this offense, okay? What about the record makes it improvident?
Your Honor, with regard to that aspect of the record, the stipulation of fact gives conclusory statements.
And that's why I'm pointing you to page 67 and 68, where he explains to the military judge in his own words why it would discredit the military.
Yes, Your Honor. And with regard to those pages in the joint appendix, what he actually describes as he's trying to explain to the military judge is how what the command's actions actually discredit the military. He talks about how people would look at the command poorly.
No, that they would think that if he killed himself, that they would think that the command wasn't doing its job, even though he hadn't told them what was going on. I mean, that's what he says.
He did say that, Your Honor, but I believe that when we look at that statement closely.
So you don't think that it would that the public will think less of the military if people are killing themselves, and that they won't think that people aren't doing their job or taking care of their sons and daughters?
Well, Your Honor, I think people might look poorly at the command for their actions in this case.
You don't think it's reasonable to infer from the record that a individual trying to kill themselves would disrupt the unit?
No, Your Honor.
And he wouldn't, and I don't think that you would disagree that there's literature out there that things like this tend to come in waves.
No, Your Honor. For one thing, there's no evidence.
All of these are a different issue than whether this is a good, whether it's a good policy idea for this to be a crime. I'm just asking about the providence of the inquiry.
I understand that, Your Honor. I think that as far as whether these types of things come in waves, there's even though the military judge said other people might get the idea that it's good to kill yourself now, I think realistically, based on our understanding of mental health and why people actually do commit suicide when they're under circumstances like this, that would not happen, and it didn't happen. There's no evidence in the record of that. But also, I think, as far as how the public might view this, we can see from the vast amount. In fact, this kind of a case, actually, we have evidence of how the public views this type of thing. From the vast media attention that's gone towards suicide, from the president's statements, other members of the Department of Defense, and Congress.
Well, which way does that cut? Doesn't that cut in favor of it being either service discrediting or prejudicial good order and discipline, if it draws substantial unfavorable attention, leaving aside the policy question, doesn't that cut in favor of a finding that service discrediting or prejudicial good order and discipline, if it draws a substantial amount of adverse publicity on the armed forces, rightly or wrongly?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so.
Why?
Because I think the public, and what we can see from all of this, is that views of mental illness and suicide...
Well, you keep skating back to 706. You keep skating back to what sounds to me like a per se argument that if anyone legitimately attempts suicide, he lacks mental responsibility. You're not saying that, are you?
Well, Your Honor, there's the mens rea aspect of this, and I am saying...
Well, I'm not talking about mens rea. I'm talking about mental responsibility. Is that what you're arguing?
I am arguing... Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, why don't you focus on the element and then what appellant said met the element, and then tell us why that does or does not meet the element.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that fair to say, rather than getting trapped in this broad conceptual discussion?
Yes, Your Honor. With regard to the services crediting element, I think that's a distinct argument from the mens rea side of it and the 706 side of it. And I think there what we've got is Private Caldwell on the record, page 6768, describing what in reality is how people would view the command. It's not how they would view the military because of his action, but more how the command responded to him. He was shunned. They did not, even though we've been trained and trained in the military, how to see this coming and how to deal with it, this command missed it. And then when it happened, they prosecuted him for it. That's the kind of thing that the public will find discrediting. I think the record doesn't...
Well, and that's a public policy argument.
Well, I think with service discrediting, with that element, it the law and public policy do, they are mixed in that regard.
Mm-hmm. It's up to us to decide what's service discrediting.
Yes, sir.
And whether X is service discrediting in a particular case. But I question whether it's up to us by judicial fiat to say in no case can anyone be prosecuted. Isn't that a decision for Congress?
Your Honor, I think it is a decision for this court in this case. We're talking about Private Caldwell's case.
Well, you're talking about providency, except that you keep skating over into mental responsibility. Providency is our baby. Public policy is not, is it?
It is with regard to whether something might be of a tendency to discredit the service in the fact that...
I don't see... That's a case-specific finding. It's not a question of public policy.
It seems to me that, you know, you want us to disregard the province inquiry, right? And you want us to say that that's not enough. And I guess my question to you is what is the basis of that? And why, if it's the case, that this should not be permitted to be seen as service discrediting or prejudicial to good order discipline, you know, why isn't, I mean, you don't disagree that the president could easily change that, right? I mean, he could change that. He could make an exception in the self-injury Article 134 discussion, right? Or DOD could change it. I mean,
yes,
it could be changed by many people.
Yes, sir.
And you don't disagree that we have case law that would support a finding that this plea was profitable?
I do disagree with that, Your Honor. I believe that what we've got from this record, again, especially with the terminal elements, there's just no evidence that was put on the record to show that there was a disorder or prejudice to this unit.
When have we required that we show the actual disorder, the actual discredit? As opposed to a person acknowledging, you know, why they believe it has a tendency to do either of those things.
Your Honor, I think with regard to service discrediting, that would be a tendency, but with prejudice, good order, discipline, it needs to be direct and palpable evidence.
But what he discussed in his providency inquiry was the service discrediting.
He did discuss service discrediting. I don't think there's anything in this record that actually demonstrates why the public would feel less strongly about the military or have a worse opinion of the military based on Private Caldwell's actions. I think what was described here is based on the command's actions, and there's a distinction there.
Your point is that your argument is that his conduct was not discrediting, it was the command's response to his conduct.
Yes, sir.
And then that's either a provident basis to meet the element or it is not.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which is counsel, sort of a legal sufficiency issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
But in a plea context, something different.
Counsel, I had a little different spin on this case, and I apologize because I didn't bring your briefs up here, so I don't know if you cited the case, but in 84 or 85, we had a case where we recognized that suicide is not an offense under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Did you cite such a case?
Your Honor, I cited to the Walker case, which wasn't a case from this court, but it's from the Air Force Court of Criminal
Appeals. Well, this one actually, a young woman enlisted her friend to help her commit suicide down at Fort Belvoir, and she succeeded. And she was charged with aiding and abetting a suicide under the aiding and abetting. And we recognize that suicide is not an offense, but she was found guilty of an assault of some variety because she pushed her or whatever. But what about if a suicide is not an offense, then attempted suicide is not an offense, is it?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe so.
So what we're trying to do is take a set of facts and create an offense out of it by calling it something else.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what your basic argument is. And it differs from intentional infliction of a self-injury.
Yes,
because
Your Honor,
the purpose was suicide.
Yes, Your Honor. I think there are two different beasts, injury versus actual suicide. And I think that, just like the Walker case talked about back in the 50s and this case from the 80s, attempted suicide for suicide is not a crime. And what's going on here is that Article 134 is being used by the government as a vehicle to try to prosecute a bona fide suicide.
And in spite of all of the controversy throughout the country about Dr. Kevorkian and others, Congress has never enacted an offense of aiding and abetting suicide as being an offense.
No, Your Honor.
So we would have to do that under the third clause.
Yes, Your Honor.
You'd have to do it under, okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, have you dropped the argument, and I'm just a little confused with your responses and your initial statement here, have you dropped the argument that a bona fide suicide attempt is just not an offense under Article 134 and can never be?
Your Honor, I think my argument with regard to that is that when a bona fide suicide attempt occurs under circumstances like this where it's associated with mental illness, then it will not meet the elements of the offense. And that's in terms of...
What's the distinction of the mental illness? If you have a bona fide suicide attempt, what difference then does mental illness bring to that equation? I mean, obviously there's mental responsibility, but as far as service discrediting or prejudicial to good order and discipline, how does that fit in?
Well, I think with regard to service discrediting and prejudice, good order, and discipline, it's a bit of a separate piece. But I think in terms of service discrediting, it does fit in because the public today views suicide attempts in circumstances like these as an illness, a manifestation of an illness, and not a misconduct or some sort of criminal type act. And so the public's not going to feel like the service is worse because people in record numbers are committing suicide right now. And I think the proxy for that is the president's statements, Congress, the media. They represent the public, and we can look at their statements and see that view.
You're not arguing all bona fide attempted suicides. You're arguing, you keep on coming back to this case. For example, what if it were a bona fide attempted suicide at a formation for the purposes of protesting a war? Could that meet the elements of disorder or discredit?
Yes, Your Honor. I see my time has expired. But I believe that could, Your Honor. I think that's in my brief where I separated different categories of suicide.
So you stand by that aspect of your brief?
I do, Your Honor. I think where there's a...
But you said that the distinction is mental illness, mental health issues, but could not one have a mental health issue and nonetheless attempt suicide in a manner that was undermining good order and discipline?
One could, Your Honor, but I think the distinction is where the suicide attempt is the sort of manifestation or result of that illness or injury, such as PTSD or depression, versus an example like a suicide bomb or something like that. I mean, there may be other mental issues with them, but they're doing it for a rational purpose. And that's different in these types of cases, such as private call laws.
Okay, thank you. Counsel for the government.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Major David Roberts, and along with Colonel Stephen Newman, I represent the government in this matter. This court should affirm the decision of the court below for two reasons. First, Ramsey and Taylor dispositively and affirmatively answered the question presented and should not be overturned. And second, no.
Does that mean you don't think there's a difference between gesture and bona fide attempt at suicide?
No, Your Honor, there's no difference between the suicide attempt, legal difference between the suicide attempt in Ramsey and the attempt at issue here.
Setting your argument up here.
And the second reason, response to the Providence argument, and the fact is that there is no substantial basis in law or fact to question appellant's Providence guilty plea. And I want to say at the outset, Your Honors, that this case is not about prosecuting suicide or attempted suicide or punishing suicide. It's about prosecuting an act, intentional self-injury, that was prejudicial to good order and discipline in the armed forces and tended to reflect discredit.
Wasn't the act actually an attempted suicide that used self-injury to do that, which I think is the definition of attempted suicide?
Exactly, Your Honor, yes.
Well, how do you separate those? Well, and that seems like semantics to me.
Well, as this court distinguished in Ramsey, the act of attempted suicide, an act of attempted suicide that forms the basis for the crime of inflicting self-injury to the prejudice of good order and discipline may be prosecuted under Article 134. And again, I want to make clear, too, that the government did not concede and has never conceded that this was a bona fide suicide attempt.
So that's what the plea says.
That was an unrebutted fact during that.
But this is a plea case, so aren't those the facts before us?
Those were the facts before us.
Isn't that what the CCA said?
The CCA evaluated this case under Ramsey as a suicide attempt, yes, sir.
Okay. So those are the facts you're arguing today?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Right. And that is why Ramsey controls here.
Are you saying Ramsey was a bona fide suicide attempt?
It was a suicide attempt. And the distinction that appellant is
making. So the best way to commit suicide is by shooting yourself in the shoulder? You're arguing that represents a bona fide suicide attempt?
The appellant in Ramsey represented that before the court as a bona fide suicide attempt, or as a suicide attempt. And
rather than a gesture, but you're saying that the two acts are not distinguishable?
The two acts are not distinguishable before this court. And that brings up the question, Judge Stuckey's question during appellant's argument, that who is to say? Who is to say? It's certainly not for this court to evaluate on a sterile record and a sterile case from 25 years ago. What was a bona fide suicide attempt and what wasn't? That's actually the distinction that was made by this court in Taylor, when it stated that an act chargeable under 134 is evaluated on the objective basis of whether it prejudiced good order and discipline. And ultimately, that's the key to understanding this whole case and why it was charged in the way it was.
Okay, how did it prejudice good order and discipline? The government goes off on this strange tack of seeming to say that, well, we had to spend money on medicine and Band-Aids, and that therefore that's inherently prejudicial to good order and discipline. What's the point is the government trying to make here?
There are five ways in which the appellant's acts prejudice good order and discipline here. That was one. Another, and the most important one, was that...
Wait a minute. Simply subjecting the government to an expenditure of appropriated money is inherently prejudicial to good order and discipline?
Expending medical supplies that could have better been used elsewhere.
So if he fell down the stairs because he didn't tie his shoe, that would be undermine good order and discipline? Because they had to come and fix him up?
In that hypothetical, Your Honor, there would not be an intentional self-injury, and you would have notice issues under Article 134. But the most important way that this prejudiced good order and discipline was that he did this immediately after being told he was going to the brig and in doing so, thwarted the commander's intent to send this Marine to
the brig. Why wasn't it charged as self-injury to avoid service then?
And that gets back to the distinction in Taylor, Your Honor. The in Taylor, this court stated that the distinction between malingering and an Article 134 self-injury offense is that in malingering, the government must prove the subjective state of mind, whereas in under the Article 134 offense, the government must prove a prejudice to go to a discipline, which is based on objective.
Right, and we're asking you to please demonstrate where in this record such prejudice occurs.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we've got bodily fluids, exposing the gunny to bodily fluids.
On the charge sheet, which appellant admitted to, he admitted to doing this after being informed that he was going to the brig. And that is in the record at...
So forestalling the command's intent to put him in the brig is inherently prejudicial to good order and discipline.
Exactly, Your Honor. And it's set an example for all other Marines who are headed for pretrial confinement.
To commit suicide.
To shoot themselves.
That they can get out of it by intentionally injuring themselves and representing it as a bona fide suicide attempt.
But you're...
That's a different...
That's not this case. You're stuck with the plea record in this case.
The plea record was not contested by the government because it was not a legally relevant fact.
But we have the record in front of us. We have the CCA decision that this was a bona fide suicide attempt.
Yes, Your Honor. And you also have the appellant's representations.
And we have the explanation as to why he did that. None of that included the fact that he's doing it as a protest.
And the matter of whether an act has a direct and palpable impact on good order and discipline is a question of fact to be resolved by the fact finder. And in a guilty plea, the military judge is entitled to rely on an accused's representations under oath as the strongest form of proof of guilt under military law. And because of those reasons, the military judge did not abuse his discretion by accepting the appellant's plea.
What's your best argument that this was prejudicial to good order and discipline?
That he was told that he was going to the brig, his bodily fluids were exposed to other Marines. It happened in the barracks, on base, in Okinawa. And that goes to the service discrediting aspect as well. This occurred in a foreign country. After the appellant was remanded
the government would take the view that it's service discrediting for a service member who served 5 tours in combat and has PTSD to attempt suicide in a barracks. That alone is service discrediting and warrants a charge under 134?
That's the extension
of your argument.
No, Your Honor. And
why isn't it the same thing?
Because the direct and palpable impact on the service discrediting nature of that conduct is not as direct as it would be as it was here. Again, the appellant did not.
This appellant has PTSD, albeit not from combat, and the record reflects that we have before us that it was a bona fide suicide attempt, and the government is arguing that's service discrediting. And how is that distinguishable from the scenario I just presented to you? A bona fide attempt by a combat veteran with PTSD.
This appellant was referred to the command's custody after stealing a belt out in town, off base in Okinawa. He was referred to the command's custody from the Japanese police. And immediately after...
He was charged with larceny.
He was charged with larceny, exactly. And he was told, based on those facts, that he was going to the brig. This shows the Japanese government that we are not able to control our service members to the extent that...
Why don't you focus on what the accused actually said during the providency inquiry?
Yes, Your Honor.
And explain why that is or is not enough in the context of the standards that we ordinarily apply as to whether a guilty plea is provident or not.
Yes, Your Honor. The accused admitted during providency that it would tend to reflect discredit upon his supervisors because it would show others that he would not that other Marines could not trust their supervisors or go to their supervisors if they're experiencing mental illness.
And so, doesn't that make the Marine Corps look bad? Because they're not doing enough to help individuals who are maybe prone to suicide.
That essentially was the accused representation during the Providence inquiry, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and that is sufficient to be prejudicial to good order and discipline.
That's the service discrediting argument. As the lower court evaluated, the stronger argument is prejudicial to good order and discipline. And as I've said, there are five ways that he was told he was going to the parade, didn't want to go, so he did this instead. He exposed Gunnery Sergeant Cordova to his bodily fluids, forced him to patch up his arm, had a palpable impact on other Marines in the unit, and significantly impacted interaction with others in the workspace.
And what is the palpable impact on others? Obviously a derogatory impact.
Yes, sir.
And what was that?
That he was unable to interact with them on the same basis as he was reported. He did use the words, it was weird. But that is, I mean, that's the
And explain to me how that's prejudicial.
Because it degraded his ability to interact with and perform his duties in the same manner as he was able to do.
And why isn't that true of all bona fide attempted suicides in the military?
There's no finding of fact on the record that this court could rely on to make that inference, Your Honor.
But you're arguing that others felt, you're saying that it's only in this case that, others felt uncomfortable around him or thought differently.
And
that alone is undermining good order and discipline.
That in addition to the other four factors, Your Honor.
Okay. Counsel, do you know what the status is? I understand that the Department of Defense General Counsel has requested that the Joint Services Committee look at amending the manual for court martial with respect to this particular offense under these particular circumstances. Do you know the status of that?
I'm aware, as you said, that the General Counsel of the Defense Department has directed the Joint Service Committee to review this. Nothing is causing this one. And the government's view that would not affect this case if this provision were amended subsequently.
The fact that they're asking it to be amended suggests that they think that this conduct currently does fall under that Article 134, correct?
I disagree with that, Your Honor. A dispositive factor would be if the President did in fact amend it by executive order, which he has not done in response to Ramsey for the last 30 years.
And so from that, you imply that the President supports this policy?
I mean,
that's the tenor of your brief.
I would tender, Your Honor, that as the Supreme Court stated in Hilton v. South Carolina Public Railway Commission, the stare decisis is stronger where precedent could be overruled by congressional or executive action, but neither of those agencies have acted. That is the case here. And another word about stare decisis, Your Honors. I mean, the Supreme Court has stated that the appellant bears the heavy burden of persuading the court that changes in society or the law dictate that the values served by stare decisis yield in favor of a greater objective. The appellant has not met that heavy burden here. Instead, he states merely that this court, in this case, can go against Ramsey and Taylor, 50 years of precedent. This court should not accept that.
Do you agree with the concept that when public policy changes, judicial rulings that are based on public policy can be re-examined?
I would agree with that. However, Ramsey and Taylor rely on the statute, Article 134.
They rely on a statute that prohibits self-injury. It's those cases, Ramsey in particular, that authorizes that statute to be used for suicide attempts. Nothing in Article 134 talks about attempted suicide. That's a judicially created doctrine.
Right. Well, no, Your Honor, I disagree with you there.
Where in 134 does it talk about attempted suicide?
There is no attempted suicide enumerated provision under Article 134.
I mean, we're talking about labels, right? I mean, if someone self-injures themselves, it may rise to the level of an attempted suicide, or it might just be a self-injury.
Yes, that's true. But the The question is, if this court adopts appellant's proposed distinction between suicide gestures, suicide attempts, bona fide suicide attempts, that completely vitiates Taylor, because it will require it will require convening authority prior to referral, require a court martial, either pre-deliberations or during deliberations, to make a determination about the accused's subjective state of mind. In fact, that is exactly what appellant's counsel stated during the argument. That is expressly contrary to Taylor, and expressly contrary to Lamb.
Can you tell us how attempted suicide was treated at common law?
I'm not prepared to brief on that. I do know that suicide in old common law was a crime, and attempted suicide could be charged. We're not, to be clear, we're not advocating a return to that dynamic.
Well, it sounds like you are. Any failed suicide is a 134 offense.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. Any attempted suicide that forms the basis of an Article 134 offense where a palpable and direct impact on good order and discipline in the unit.
Well, tell me one that doesn't.
It would not affect good order and discipline in the unit. An extreme example would be if a service member swallowed a bunch of pills at home and nobody ever found out about it. Well, the corpus delicti.
Well, that's the same with that. If he murdered somebody, nobody ever found out about him. We don't get anywhere with that.
If it occurred at home, off base, his family resolved it. He didn't miss work.
He didn't miss work.
He's dead.
And he was in uniform, and his company didn't take care of him sufficiently so that he wouldn't kill himself or herself. I mean,
yes.
If suicide is indeed the worst enemy the armed forces has in 2012, as far as taking lives of soldiers, sailors, and Marines, then why should we criminalize it when a guy fails? I mean, I understand your argument about the elements, clearly. But it just seems to me you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. Chief Judge Baker's illustration is manifestly, you know, prejudicial to good order and discipline, where he stands in front of the unit and pours a gasoline on him and wraps the American flag and says, you know, the hell with the Marine Corps or something. But
yes, sir.
But there he's got some motive.
The circumstantial evidence adduced, and which was admitted to during the providence inquiry, shows that he did this directly after being told he was going to the brig. He didn't want to go to the brig again, and so he did this. And in fact, he himself says that this was the last straw. Now, he represented it as a bona fide suicide attempt. Perhaps the best course of action there for the trial counsel was to suspend providence inquiry, withdraw from the pretrial agreement, and go forward. But he didn't have to, because he had the precedent in Ramsey and Taylor to rely on. And it didn't blow providence. And that's why the military judge did not abuse his discretion, did not err in accepting the accused guilty plea here.
How did the military judge describe this charge, by the way?
I don't have the exact verbiage.
He said it was an odd charge.
He said it was an odd charge.
Attempting to criminalize attempted suicide.
Yes, he did. Yes, and that should have little bearing on this court's consideration of the guilty plea here, because he did ultimately accept the accused guilty plea as provident. That, if anything, is an editorial comment. In summary, Your Honors, Ramsey and Taylor do control this case. This case cannot be resolved in appellant's favor without overruling Ramsey and Taylor. Considerations of stare decisis compel an affirmance of the court below. Because the military judge did not abuse his discretion, there is no substantive basis in fact or law to question the guilt of plea here. We implore this court to preserve the commander's discretion to punish affronts to good order and discipline, and affirm this case.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellant, is there a rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Counsel, before you get started, the government counsel raised a point about the subjective state of mind with respect to any intentional self. I mean, you don't disagree that the element of self-injury was met here, right? That he injured himself.
Your Honor, he did injure himself.
Okay, and so how do you deal with the government's point that in every instance where someone injures themselves, that there'll have to be a weighing and determination as to, you know, what they meant by it and what their subjective state of mind was before they can determine whether they can be charged under that article?
Well, I think, I mean, that's the 706 mechanism.
That goes back to the fact that you wanted us to review the 706 board, and we didn't grant that issue.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that this court can craft a clear rule here in terms of...
But I mean, we're not mental health professionals. How do we craft a clear rule that is going to turn on whether someone really meant to hurt themselves or really wanted to die or was just making a suicidal gesture?
I think there are a couple of different ways to do it. I think this court could adopt a similar type rule to what the Jagman says, which is that there's a presumption when it's a bona fide suicide attempt, which is rebuttable, that there's no mental responsibility.
But that starts with that it was a genuine suicide attempt. That if it was a genuine suicide attempt, that there's a presumption of lack of mental responsibility, but doesn't answer the question as to whether it was genuine or not.
Well, I think evidence of a genuine suicide attempt might create that presumption, and that might be one way this court.
But how is that going to get determined up front, whether it was genuine or not?
Well, I think the military judge, just as in this case he did, can make a finding of fact where in Caldwell he said it's not charged because we're criminalizing attempted suicide. I think that's something that can be done up front.
But he's not saying there that it was a genuine attempt. He's saying it was attempted suicide. I mean, whether something is a suicidal gesture or something more, it's always a suicide attempt.
Yes, Your Honor. And in this case, the uncontradicted facts were that it was a bona fide suicide attempt. In other, say, a contested case, I think, you know, for example, if Ramsey had gone contested, then that would be a way of dealing with it, that once evidence came forward, the government might be able to rebut the mental presumption there. However, I think in this case, it's uncontradicted that it was a bona fide suicide attempt.
In following up Judge Ryan's question, where would we put the burden of proof? Would we put the burden on the accused to show that it was bona fide, or would we put the burden on the government to show it was not bona fide?
I think in that area, the court could adopt something similar to what it's adopted for example, unlawful command influence. There's some evidence put forward, more than mere speculation, that it's a bona fide suicide attempt that would be on the defense. And it would be up to the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it either was not a bona fide suicide attempt or perhaps that it was motivated, such as the example of the person who shoots himself in front of the entire company as a protest for some rational purpose. I think that would be a clear rule. And I think that...
If it's a bona fide suicide attempt, what difference does a purpose make based on your rule?
Well, I think the purpose makes a difference in terms of distinguishing between suicide bombers or people that are intentionally, even though typically the majority of these cases are mental illness driven, depression driven, PTSD driven, there are some cases like that, and that distinction can be made, I think.
This is a plea case, however. Do we need to resolve all that to address your case?
No, Your Honor. In this case, the court just needs to find whether there's a substantial basis in law or fact to question the plea. And I think the evidence here is that there is a substantial basis in law or fact to question this plea. I'd like to point out the example the government brought in about good order and discipline, that people were shocked and didn't know how to react. That's the same kind of response people might have if someone told them they had cancer or some other disease. It doesn't show direct prejudice, good order, and discipline.
In a military formation, people being shocked and not knowing how to react doesn't imply some prejudice to good order and discipline.
No, Your Honor. I think we need direct evidence of that.
Go ahead.
I think we need direct evidence, palpable evidence that the unit actually was disordered. Here we've got...
Well, it sounds like it was, doesn't it? People didn't know how to react. People were, you know, what happened? What happened to this unit?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think
or is that direct and indirect?
I think that's indirect. I think what...
What you're going on is direct and indirect. You say it's indirect.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think there's also no evidence that the unit was actually disordered or that...
Counsel, your time is up. Are there other questions from the bench? You have 7 seconds or less to summarize if you'd like.
Okay. In brief conclusion, I'd just say that it was a struggle to get through Providency. It was a struggle for the lower court. The practitioners need some clear guidance on this issue, and I think setting aside Private Caldwell's conviction in this case would provide that clear guidance. Thank you.
The court thanks both counsel for your argument today, and we stand in recess until further order of the court. Thank you.
All rise. Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.